Hello and welcome to Conversations in Cleantech, the podcast that celebrates the cleantech industry and the people that power it, brought to you by Brightsmith. For our seventh season, we're speaking to cleantech leaders about the process of investing in a cleaner planet, from inspiring stories and words of wisdom to financial forecast and investment insights. You can learn all about the people and companies who are driving these investments and propelling us towards a cleaner, greener tomorrow. I'm your regular host, Jenny Gladman, but this season there's a twist. I'll be taking a few months off to have my second baby. So I'm handing the reins of our podcast over to a series of fellow Brightsmithers who will be season 7's super co-hosts. So without further hesitation,
as partner energized capital, WAN is integral to all aspects of the fund's operations, including leading sourcing efforts, developing investment theses, driving diligence of potential investments, network management, and supporting the monitoring of its portfolio companies. Previously, WAN worked at JP Morgan, where his work ranged from business analyst to research, advertising, and working with international investors on portfolio allocation and private investments. WAN holds an MBA from the University of Chicago and a BA from the University of Notre Dame, magna cum laude. WAN currently sits on the board of directors for Bayern Infrastructure, Beekeeper, Finite State, SourceMap, Monta, Zeta, and is a board observer of Nozomi Networks. We're excited to have him on the show.
So WAN, welcome to the show. So look, let's give our audience a little bit more about you and your background.
Hi Ben, good morning. My name is Juan Muldoon. I'm one of the partners at Energize Capital. A little bit about Energize first, and then I'll give you a little bit of my background. Energize, we launched the firm in 2016, and we are an asset management firm focused on the intersection of technology, and primarily software technology, and the energy transition. So we believe that the energy transition is underway, and that there are lots of important areas where software and digital tools can help move things forward. And we specialize at that intersection. So we have a venture capital engine for investments, which I co-lead, where we make Series A, Series B, Series C investments primarily at the point of entry in entrepreneurs that are bringing, you know, these types of technologies to market. And then we also have a growth equity engine that comes in and partners with entrepreneurs in a little bit later stage. But we really see ourselves as the platform of choice for entrepreneurs that are building technologies to accelerate the energy transition in more of a digital capital light, software-driven kind of way. Today, we have about $1.2 billion across those two primary investment engines. We have a team of about 21 people, most of us based in Chicago, and we cover the gamut with that intersection. Maybe a little bit about myself. I started my career in the finance world, worked at JP Morgan for a number of years, based out of New York City, where I got to see firsthand what the investment really landscape looked like. But after very rigorous learning, I guess, in the markets, I came to the realization that I wanted to be closer to companies. I wanted to make sure that my time was spent in decisions that were actually driving the needle, making more of an impact on business operations and on outcomes, because it's hard to really move influence at, you know, super, super later stage companies if you're, you know, on the banking side of the world, or at least I felt that way. So I loved JP Morgan. It was a fantastic experience, and I still think very highly of my colleagues there. But I left, moved to Chicago, where we established Energize in 2016.
Awesome, appreciate that. And you've been there quite a while now, haven't you? You've been there
since the beginning, yes.
Since the beginning, one. Since the inception.
Since,
yeah,
we, okay, were, since we were an idea on the back of a napkin in early 2016.
And maybe we'll come on to that in a moment. But so you know, obviously, you know, you are living your purpose at the moment, you know, in your work. We our strap line is live your purpose. So I'm curious, even maybe outside of work, you know, how are you living yours?
I have the benefit of being able to live it at my work as well. But outside of my work, family's always been very important to me. And so I have three kids. I like to spend as much time with them as possible. And I just want to be there. I think that, you know, when I look at my kids, what they want is parents that are there. And I want to be there.
And how are you living your purpose in your day to day?
Well, I think that's it. I think it's giving a good example to them. And then, you know, certainly for work, I have the pleasure of being able to help drive something forward that I think really matters. For me, being able to find a convergence of business and purpose, meaning accelerating something that I think is positive for the world, and something that is going to endure, you know, for several decades, as well as having having had the opportunity to really help start a firm that today, you know, I think is one of the premier actors in the space, is very fulfilling.
And, you know, obviously thinking back to that time, you know, and I'm obviously, you know, through telling stories, we also give mentorship. So, you know, I'm thinking back to you, you're in JP Morgan, large organization. You know, what inspired you to move into clean tech in general?
It's a good question. I think that my inspiration was a little bit broader. Even from before I joined JP Morgan, when I was in college and before, I always sought to find work that could be aligned to my vision and my values. And so it's kind of, you know, odd to then end up as a banker, perhaps. I think I probably would have started my career more as a banker for the World Bank instead, but I didn't. I had the opportunity to join, you know, JP Morgan and work there for a number of years, and that was really great. But going back to your question, why focusing on clean energy? I think it was a couple of different things. Number one, I loved the fact that the energy world was not going anywhere. Right. If you think about what is not going to change in 10, 20, 30, 100 years, people are still going to need power. People are still going to need probably electricity. Right? People are still going to want to do more of the things that today consume a lot of power. Right? Computing, technology, all of this takes electricity. I think that we as a society are going to continue to need that, potentially at a faster rate, but that the industry itself is going through really big changes. There was a massive transition happening back then, and I think it's obviously still accelerating, in terms of shifting from mostly fossil-based electricity production to now decarbonized electricity production. And when you have an opportunity to take an industry that is, you know, global, that is obviously enduring, where, you know, you have a clear path to scale, right? Massive, massive industry. And that itself is kind of being shaken up by new technology, renewable energy, more and more digital technologies being used. I just thought that was an incredible opportunity to build something that was going to be lasting. And so it started more from that perspective than the other way around.
So you touched on it before, but I'd love to know more about sort of Energize Capital and specifically the sort of underpinning values or mission of the business. And obviously, you know, I suppose, you know, what gives you competitive edge over your competition in the space?
We invest in climate solutions with ambition, right? We partner with those builders and operators that are actually shaping our future. And we think that it's very important to do that with conviction. And so, you know, we only focus on this area, as I mentioned, software and sustainability, or call it software and the energy transition. And so we can be much more prepared. We can come into a market having a prepared mind through our work, which is really very research led and thesis oriented, right? So we like to spend a lot of time on a particular sector, getting to know who the main players are, how is technology actually impacting this landscape, and specifically, is their budget, are the pain points that people solving real enough to be able to actually sustain growing businesses at scale, right? And so most of our work at Energize is actually, it's that. It's finding out from the front lines, from the operators, from the builders, where are budgets growing? Where are technologies actually impacting your business? What are areas where you see soft costs or inefficiencies or opportunities for greater improvements or greater efficiency potentially through software? And so what that allows us to do is we have a prepared mind, right? We can be much more outbound in our deal flow generation. And so we can play offense a little bit more on our terms. But then the best part is when you get to speak with an entrepreneur that is, you know, building something incredibly exciting, you already know the space. You don't have to start from zero. You don't have to say, what is a VPP and what does it stand for, right? Like, we've already done that legwork. And we can come in with a very differentiated point of view, sometimes, you know, positive or negative, about that particular space. So that's number one. And I think number two, post-investment, it's important to have, or at least we believe that it's very important to have a combination of software and product and technical knowledge, but also industry dynamics and appreciation for how these industries work. Because the reality is that if you're selling to utilities, industrial companies, energy companies, power companies, and you're selling software, that is sort of your value prop, you're going to need to take a slightly different approach, most likely, than if your customers were very different, right? So it's helpful, we've seen, to have a specialist at the board level that can also be the voice of that industry and help be the voice of the customer in the room, so that management teams can make decisions based on the field that they're actually playing and not based on just, you know, what generally works for software companies.
A large portion of our listeners are in the mobility as a service or, you know, e-mobility space, and also where SaaS also meets that sort of energy transition. But for those that are not, I'd love for you to kind of zoom out a little bit and give us a bit of a macro view of kind of why, you know, mobility as a service or how SaaS platforms are pivotal in the energy transition in the US or maybe even globally.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we can even go, you know, one level higher. It's
probably a whole podcast, right? But
yeah, for sure. But maybe as a starting point, you know, part of one of our frameworks that we use for evaluating software readiness and software's impact on a transition kind of goes through the three primary waves of innovation that the energy industry generally goes through. And we've seen this, you know, over several decades, but it basically comes down to three distinct phases of innovation. The first phase tends to be very hardware enabled. Right, some new science, technology. Think about solar panels, you know, several decades ago, where there's a new asset potentially, and the gains in this first wave of innovation really tend to accrue to one that has manufacturing scale and capacity, someone that has some benefit in that kind of hardware level. Right, what ends up happening is usually the prices will continue to fall. Right, it becomes commoditized as volume increases, and that gives way to the second wave of innovation, which is one where traditionally you'll have some business model innovation, some shift that allows new entrants to the space to potentially combine that new hardware piece of equipment with something new. So think about, sticking with the solar example, not just the hardware itself, but companies that might have offered, you know, the hardware and financing, or hardware and services, or hardware something else, right, that allows you to get more of this product out. And that's a really interesting phase, because in that phase, the hardware costs per unit continue to decline. And what we see is that there's all these additional costs that begin to creep up as a percentage of the installed units cost of the total. These are soft costs, right? So these are things like permitting or underwriting, or all these little bits that kind of nooks and crannies where costs begin to add up, inefficiencies in the system begin to build up. And you start with something that's pretty manual. But as you scale out with time, then you get to a point where the soft costs as a percentage of the overall unit cost can be 50% or greater. Right, because the hard costs continue to fall, and then the soft costs begin to creep up, and that's what gives rise to the third wave, which is where we become really excited at the venture stage. Right, that is where software and digital solutions can help and either eliminate or reduce a lot of those soft costs, which makes the installation or the management or whatever it is that you're dealing with more affordable. It makes it more efficient, more attractive. Right. To get it out. And so this is just one example of a framework, but we really think that software has a pivotal role to play in general in the energy transition. And we've seen this with solar, we've seen this with batteries, we've seen this with electric vehicles and electric vehicle infrastructure, where we are very, very bullish. And we think that this is a cycle that tends to repeat itself in energy. So a lot of our work is understanding where different technologies are and making a call on, is this a technology that is ready for software to be very impactful in its deployment or in its management within our investment horizon? Or is this something that is still maturing and might be there in, you know, maybe a little bit further along?
Thank you for that. And are there any either specific niche market segments within that you're super excited by now? Or if you can or want to, maybe you can touch on a couple of your portfolio.
For sure. I think that, you know, we've seen solar be a fantastic market recently for software. We are big investors in a company called Aurora Solar. We led the Series A, and we are still on the board of that company. Basically, what it does, for the listeners that are not aware, is it's a software-only tool to help installation of mostly residential and commercial rooftop solar. And so Aurora is able to use LiDAR information to get a very, very accurate mapping of the potential target roof, right? And then with a couple of clicks, streamlines the process to design the optimal system for that layout, as well as ingesting information around the pricing, the potential output, all the things that were very, very manual and would have otherwise taken not just weeks, but somebody to, you know, have a truck out to the house, to get on the roof, to take a measurement, to be really inefficient. Software can do all of that in a much, much more efficient way. And we think that there's a lot of ways that solar specifically can benefit from software tools. It's in that third wave, right? That's one. We're also investors in a company called Monta Charging, more recent investors there. We led the Series A plus and then recently a large Series B. It's a company based out of Copenhagen that basically brings software to manage electric vehicle infrastructure. So all of the things that we want our EV infrastructure to be able to do, from billing, user management, the actual transaction and charge management, it allows installers, charge point operators to be able to offer this to drivers. And it's the premier application today in Europe, which is the biggest and probably most mature market for EVs today.
We're seeing a lot of those European organizations start to navigate this side of the pond in the US as well, especially those that have got scale. Thank you for that. So look, you touched on your career move, 8 years ago, moving from finance. Thinking back to either that time or some of the others, what have been some of the stretch moments, again, that you've had in your careers to date? And again, can be current day or previously.
I've benefited a lot from folks that have kind of taken a risk alongside us. I think that, when I came out of JP Morgan, I was sort of in the right place at the right time and began to work with an institution in Chicago called Evergreen. Back then it was called the Clean Energy Trust. And it was a nonprofit that basically took capital and invested it initially through grants for energy companies that were based or started in the Midwest. It was a fantastic group, I think one of the best kept secrets in the Midwest. And what we were starting to do back then was we were shifting from just grant making to thinking more about investments. And can we, if we're putting this capital out, can we figure out a way for that to become a little bit more more evergreen, right? Where the gains from some of those investments would come back, establish more of a long-term portfolio. Actually, they've since renamed their name to Evergreen. That organization still stands. But that was a pivotal moment because not only did it give me much clearer perspective on the energy industry and the transition that it was undergoing, but I got to work with some wonderful people. I think the second was, and I think this is continuous, has been building Energize out as a firm, as an organization. When we launched in 2016, the world was not really excited about clean energy, right? I think a lot of the impact and the interest that we've seen in the climate sector in the last couple of years is pretty recent. Back then, folks still remembered the clean tech 1.0 bubble and bust, without a lot of fanfare. And, being able to put together a team, being able to put together the foundation with limited partners that understood that what we were doing was important and that we could have a differentiated perspective. Some of our anchor LPs remain with us, and I think that's been fantastic. But certainly stretch, right? I think that, anytime that you're creating something, something that didn't exist before, you benefit a lot from people that believe with you along the way. I hope that answers your question, Ben.
Yeah, no, definitely. If you could sort of go back to that time and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
Be patient. I'm not the most patient person. And I think that's a blessing and a curse. I think that, when you see something so clearly and when you have this ambition that I talked about before, you want to build quickly. You want to, get it out to market. You want to give that moment, or get to that moment sooner rather than later. And sometimes, you forget that these industries take time. The energy world wasn't built overnight, but I think that we've done okay.
In the 8 years you've been at Energize or founded Energize, you know, what have been some of the sort of the market headwinds, or how have you seen the investment landscape shift? Maybe it hasn't, I don't know, but I'm guessing it would have done.
Yes, I mean, I think it's changed in a lot of different ways. So as I mentioned initially, we did not have a huge market for energy transition or energy support. Climate was not in the forefront of people's discussions, right? Not for limited partners, not for entrepreneurs. There were few people that were building in the space, not a lot of investors either. And as I mentioned, I think people were still sort of trying to figure out how is this different from the last time that it went wrong. And I mean, we launched Energize in the eve of an administration change that was supposed to be a death knell for renewables. In reality, obviously it was not a death knell for renewables, in part because that economic train has left the station. And you know, that was one of our early beliefs, that the energy transition and the shift to more renewables makes sense from an economic perspective, and therefore, you know, it will accelerate, right? And I think that we still see that today. But that was certainly not the temperature in the room in the early days. I think, you know, funny enough, I think with COVID that changed dramatically. I think people became more excited by the potential to solve big problems, and you know, climate as an ecosystem really began to come together. And now you've seen dozens of new firms that have been founded as investment firms that are exclusively dedicated to the space. Excellent, excellent teams, incredible talent, incredible cohort of entrepreneurs, frankly, that that have said, "Hey, you know what? I've got some skills that I've developed either on software or on business management or on operations. And now I want to dedicate some of them back to something that matters, right? Something to, like energy." We've also seen a lot of operators shift into the space, later kind of mid-career operators that again have become functional experts in one or two areas and say, okay, well, if I'm an excellent enterprise SaaS salesperson, to give you an example, I could be selling marketing, you know, software, or I could be selling energy software. You know what? I could actually have more of an impact here. And so there was a lot of talent that shifted in that direction, which was, we think, an awesome leading indicator also of where the space is going. And the last thing that I think changed dramatically in these last couple of years is we got a lot more attention from other investors that were not necessarily up to speed or had not been through the ringer before. Right, lots of large firms that said, "I want to have a presence in energy, and you know, we're committed to backing entrepreneurs in this space as well." And there's some excellent investors that had been a little bit more dormant, perhaps, and you know, wanted to develop theses, points of views, deploy capital in a space that that we know and love so well.
Is there, you know, that's an interesting one. We you know, obviously the talent bridge from other sectors, but also the investment bridge from, I would guess, probably more traditional, you know, SaaS, you know, SaaS players. You know, how are you, well, are you having to coach those people specifically on, you know, how to invest in clean tech? And if not, you know, what do you see as the main differences between a, you know, a traditional SaaS player, you know, enterprise SaaS player and clean tech startup?
Well, first of all, I'd say Energize is very collaborative. We like working with those institutions that can bring something in a complementary way. And if we can be the voice of the industry or the voice of the room, or you know, bring in a little bit more of a here's how this works in energy or in climate perspective, that's worked very well. That's number one. We've actually made a pretty big push to put our thoughts out there. The tools, the frameworks that we have, we've pushed them out into the world. We've created a lot of content both for entrepreneurs and for investors that are considering the space, that are looking at, you know, how do I even start? If I'm looking at software for energy, what does that mean, right? What are some of the key deep dives that we've done? We've published a lot of that. And so, you know, we do try to help increase the awareness and increase the sort of raise the level of dialogue both with investors and with CEOs. Which I think has been very, very positive. And I think that, you know, the learning across the board is a little bit what I mentioned before, which is scaling software companies in energy or mobility or construction or manufacturing is just a little different, right? We like to use the analogy of matching the engine to the race. You might be, you know, building a Ferrari, but are you running, you know, a, what kind of race are you on? Are you on the Paris-Dakar? Because if so, the Ferrari is not going to take you very far. And I think that entrepreneurs need to be aware of that. They need to, and investors too, right? We have an industry that sometimes can have very long sales cycles, can have, you know, technically challenging, you know, scale up. If you think that you're building something that'll have a different kind of dynamic in the market, especially in go-to-market, then, you know, you could be absorbing a lot more risk than you know. And so a lot of what we've tried to do is you know, shine some light on exactly those issues.
And is there any specific ways that you assess risk?
On the venture side, you know, we invest in post-commercial companies for the most part, right? So we invest in companies that have already developed a, you know, maybe early version of a product, but that have already met the market, have already seen a customer or many customers go through. And what we like to see is renewal cycles. For us, that's very, very important because, again, our research begins with, is there budget available, right? Is there something, is there a pain point here that people are actually trying to solve and are willing to put budget or resources against that? And so that for us is very important as a risk mitigation strategy. And then, you know, honestly, most of this comes down to people, Ben, and that won't be news for you, but, you know, how well does the team work together? What are the missing ingredients that that this company has that we think we can address either on our own or, you know, through additional talent additions? And at the end of the day, it's aligning pretty well on both of those things that, you know, that addresses a huge part of it.
And, you know, as we're coming to the end now, I'm curious, you know, how are you, given the market shifts you're seeing, you know, how are you or how would you be coaching a first time founder or CEO, probably founder in the space? What are some of the nuggets of advice you'd give that person?
Let me get to that in just a hot second, because I wanted to say one more thing about our approach to risk,
yeah, sure,
which I think is important. And it comes down to, you know, we like to really put the resources of the firm of Energize behind our investments as we're building out a company in partnership with those entrepreneurs. And so in addition to the investment team and, you know, our operating experience, we have a set of experts that we have now in-house called our Edge team. And their whole mission really is to support functionally with senior level talent across the firm. So we have a gentleman called Jeff Schmidt, who used to be chief revenue officer at actually another of our portfolio companies, Drone Deployed, before he joined us full-time at Energize. And he can be sort of a go-to-market extraordinaire. He's got decades of experience scaling up enterprise SaaS businesses. And he can literally deploy, you know, if a company needs him, or just provide, you know, different kinds of perspective and advice. Similar, we have a gentleman on the finance side named David Yee, our portfolio finance specialist, who can provide just additional muscle that sometimes early stage companies don't have or don't have bandwidth for, or might just not have, you know, a different kind of point of view. And so we can provide that with our Edge team. And that's been really, really successful, both as a risk mitigation strategy, but also as a growth enhancing strategy, right? If we can offer a company a better way or structure to get more customers and to, you know, be more efficient with their capital, I think most CEOs would take you up on that. And maybe getting back to your question around, you know, what sort of advice do you have for founders? I think that, you know, the best founders that I've worked with, and I've had, you know, the pleasure of working with some incredible, incredible founders, they are deeply convicted in what they're doing, and they're fantastic at leveraging capital, human capital, talent, bringing folks on board, sharing a vision, and then actually executing on that. And I know that that's sort of, you know, kind of high level, but I think that that's critical when you're building something, whether you're building a firm or whether you're building a software company or whether you're building, you know, something else. So that's number one. And then I think number two, there's no straight lines here, right? There's a lot of bumps along the road. Talk about that race again, right? And who you have alongside you, both on your team, on your board, across the table, the folks that are with you on that journey make all the difference sometimes between, you know, survival and failure as a company. And so, you know, there's no one answer of, you know, who should you have, but be thoughtful, because I think that you need resources and you know, it's important to be able to know how to leverage them properly.
And I can imagine that's driving the internal dialogue that leader has, right? Making sure that cohesion is happening with his or her team.
Yeah, and playing bigger, right? Like it helps you when you have not just people that you trust, but people that can make you better. At the end of the day, startups and in general venture capital is about growth. It's about maybe being a little bit uncomfortable, going too fast, and maybe making some difficult decisions at the firm level. And I think that having excellent talent around you makes all of that worth it.
So as we're closing now, I'm any final thoughts about the sector? You're obviously excited about it. You're obviously invested heavily in it. You know, any thoughts for the sector moving forward as you look into your crystal ball?
I mean, I think that this is still one of the most exciting areas that anybody could spend, you know, time with. We're in very, very early innings of specifically digital tools touching this transition. And I think that, you know, if you fast forward 5-10 years, it's going to be, we are going to have multiple unicorns in this space. We have, and they're starting to be born now, right? So if that's you, call us. We'd love to work with you.
Awesome. Ben, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Ben.